This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So how did Phil have that power, if but temporary?
That's good, yeah, exactly. It's just for a moment to feel the power in my hand. I have to say, you know, I think the power of an individual member of Congress is limited by the other... it's limited in general. But it was definitely fun to play it. Politician.
After making your very auspicious directorial debut, what was the process of getting back into acting?
I think it was. Well, for one thing, it was a relief to not have to worry about everything all the time. You know, something could go wrong. Things could take a long time. There could be some confusion about the scene, and I just was able to remind myself that it wasn't my responsibility. I could just go to the trailer and, like, listen to music, call people. You know, I didn't have to have that full-time anxiety of the feeling of responsibility for the movie. But directing a movie was really instructive for me. I think I learned a lot about writing, learned a lot about acting. I just learned sort of how all the pieces fit together from the inside, which was really valuable. So it was a good thing.
Did you take anything from, say, the John Edwards scandal or any of the recent? It's been time immemorial. The politicians have fooled around. But did you develop in your own head things from these current things in the news or not?
You know, we as you point out, we internalize almost, these scandals. We know them like... they're almost rote, you know. They become like cliches, you know. The story breaks. They stand next to the spouse. They profess, they say God has forgiven them, or they're asking God to forgive them, and they want their constituents to forgive them, and then they go out and, you know, spear trash in the park or something, and try to reconstitute their political career, and eventually people do forget, and it's this cycle now that's almost lost its meaning of begging for forgiveness and hopefully receiving it. This sort of like. I'm not sure, those things are so, I kind of was so familiar with them that what was more interesting to me was to think about, what's the real experience like that you wouldn't think of from the outside. And one of the things that I think is probably true, as I thought about from Gary Condit to Elliot Spitzer to John Edwards, is that the notion of, like, we all sit around and think, how could she forgive him? How could she stand there with him? And that thinking about it from the point of view of the politician, when that media glare gets put on you and your family and it's blasting on them, I think it seemed to me that their instinct would probably be to much more kind of to protect themselves, to come together. And so that, like, forgiving someone publicly to me seemed obvious. Like, if you're in that situation, that wife, it's probably not even a thought. Like, I may give you a hard time about this, privately and rail against you, but when we go out there, we're going to be a team. I'm going to forgive you. I was less surprised by it when I did the movie and really thought about it.
Do we hold politicians up to a too high a standard, or should we expect more from them, do you think?
I don't think that we hold politicians to too high a standard. I don't think we hold anyone to a particularly high standard anymore. I think we've become accustomed to the frailty of all public figures because we've started to traffic in scandal so much and people's shortcomings, and the train wreck is become such a popular exhibit. I think we know that. I think we like to see the prurient side of politics for whatever reason, the underbelly. So we chase these stories. And oftentimes find them. But I think politicians should be held to a certain standard. I mean, there are elected officials, for God's sake. If they're not going to keep it together, who is?
Well, we know you're very interested in politics. How happy are you with what Obama has accomplished so far?
Well, it's quite early in the administration. It's 70, 68 days or 70, I don't know, somewhere in that first early 60 days. And I think anybody could just open the window and know that a lot of folks are having a very hard time out there. So they're faced with a steep uphill climb, two wars, economy collapses on you. It's going to be challenging. And I think the Obama administration, I believe, will be defined ultimately in 4 years or 3.5 years when they are really running by how well they've handled this economic crisis, but whether or not our economy is sort of back on its feet, in the next couple of years, or whether it's still sputtering. And I think it's too hard to know now.
And even to have a plan early on. Seems like an improvement.
Let me say something. I mean, you can judge Obama as compared to Obama, and you can be critical. I mean, judge Obama as compared to the previous administration, and it'd be almost impossible for him to fail.
Look at the media as sort of like a nostalgic look at a sort of all the president's men kind of, you know, noble media that doesn't exist anymore, or do you think it offers kind of hope for a positive direction to go?
I don't know. You guys are the experts on this stuff about whether there's a nobility to media or what goes on inside a newsroom. I think this is the last movie that will be set in a newspaper. I think this may, you know, I don't know how this movie would be perceived, but I do believe that people will look back and say, oh yeah, that was the movie that came out right around the time that the internet destroyed newspapers. And that is happening. And you know, New York Times laid off 200 people yesterday or something. You know, they're cutting salaries. It's the blogging and news sites are now superseding that. Traditional news gathering, you know, ink on dead trees organizations. And I don't think the verdict is in on what that means or, you know, what's going to happen or what the integrity is of one institution versus the other. It's really interesting. Part of what this movie looks at is, you know, the tension between Rachel's character and Russell's character is, you know, which kind of side of us is going to win out in that? What does the world look like with just bloggers gathering news? I think there's two models, right? One is this incredible global, you know, journalism, a full democratization of journalism where you have like virtual, actual correspondent in every home, you know, everywhere. There was like, for example, there was people blogging from Mumbai right when those incidents started happening, you know, and where you get to the truth and you don't have to worry about bias because you have so many bloggers that ultimately it's impossible to lie because there's too much evidence that can come out from other people to refute people who report with bias. So you have this like incredible, you know, everyone's a reporter model, right? The other model is everyone's biased, no one sources anything, it's just ugly noise, and, you know, we've destroyed our journalistic standards.
Do you subscribe to a daily newspaper?
You know, we're moving, and just had this conversation. I feel like I'm like part of the, just in the middle, the mean of society. We're moving, and I get the LA Times and the New York Times, but I only read them online. And so as we're moving, I was like, why are we going to get paid for the newspaper again? And so I didn't. And I thought, like, look, I'm either part of the problem or I'm part of the solution. I don't know which one.
What's your perspective on the difference between the media celebrity relationship as opposed to media politics relationship? Is it very much the same or very much different?
From my point of view, and again, I'm not a total expert, but I have had some experience. They're very similar. They're similar in the pressures that exist, the pressures that are brought to bear on the media side to sell magazines, sell newspapers, get hits on your website, right? So the focus has to be on the thing that sells the most, which tends to be the most sensational, the most scandalous, the most headline-grabbing. So maybe the temptation is to bend the truth. In the case of entertainers, you know, they'll flat make up stories and, you know, completely use like sources that, you know, either don't exist or are, you know, stuff that's very thinly sourced. On the political side, people are a little bit more judicious about, you know, completely abandoning journalistic standards. But still, you have those same impulses to like push to find the story, to dig up the sort of most scandalous aspect of it. But I think there's the other side that's at war too, which is the side that wants to do good journalism, do good reporting, that cares about the substantial stuff, and that's saying to the powers that be, like, I don't want to do this all the time. I want to do something interesting. And so that yin and yang is, you know, kind of at play on both sides, of entertainment and in politics. I think the only difference is really that entertainers, frankly, people feel like they're feel more comfortable kind of just saying, you know, it's fine, just print it, just run it, because they know it's not the President of the United States, you know, no one's going to come back, it's not going to change the world, so they figure, I'll just print it.
You know? Do you think that the fact that there's so much that's cannibalized from the front, there's a story will break in print media, and then it's all over the web, and it's all the bloggers comment on it, do you think that actually, I mean, in the past, it would just be a story. It would be a story in the newspaper. There wouldn't be millions and millions of different outlets picking up on it. All these different people making comments about it, wagging their fingers at people, shaming people. Do you think that it's actually hurting more or helping, as you said, it becomes so, we're almost like hardened to it at this point. We're getting so used to all these scandals.
Part of the blogging culture that's negative, part of that's good is that, you know, it's expanded the, it's made the traditional press much more nervous. They've become more accountable because they are the ones who are most sensitive to what the bloggers are going to say. Most Americans don't. They don't spend their days worrying about what bloggers are going to say. They read the blogger that they want to read, but they're not like, oh, what's going to come out in the blogs? But the mainstream media sweats it because it's for the first time that's they are actually accountable to someone who's going to write about them and their work, which had a real, I think, a very strong impact on the mainstream media and how they worked. I think it has coarsened the dialogue a little bit, as you say, this kind of like, a lot of shaming, a lot of finger wagging, a lot of, it's like a public gossip high school mill about like, that involve, you know, every time a story comes out, 50 people start like digesting it, and a lot of them are very jaded, and so you get like all these different viewpoints on it, and ultimately you have a million blogs and a lot of them are just different iterations of the same sort of take on something, you know, and there's a few that are really good and smart and a lot of them that are just people who want to be ugly about something. I think that, you know, in terms of one of the things that will be interesting to see is that, as you point out, a lot of bloggers are sourcing from the mainstream media, right, the newspapers. So if the newspapers are gone, bloggers are going to have to start doing more reporting, which I think will be good, actually. I hope that that's what happens. Conversely, you know, the newspapers have gotten lazy and gotten nervous and started just sourcing from blogs. And that, I think, is dangerous because you can pick any blog. I can just start a blog tomorrow, right? And then just be like, you know, I heard that so-and-so is an alien or whatever, you know, and then somebody, well, that's on a blog. That's out there. It's enough of a source to sort of pick it up and start a fire going. Now, obviously, something as outrageous as that people won't use, but it's, you know, I mean, a lot of false stories got, you know, started and got some currency because they were placed in blogs. But again, you know, I'm really...
You just think about someone like John F. Kennedy or someone like that, though, if he was around when there were blogs, with all the rumors around him.
Yeah, it would have been a different...
I'm curious.
You know? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Would we need to know all that then?
I don't think we need to know anything about people's right. sex lives or personal lives. So, I think it's totally irrelevant.
So I think that's what I was saying. Like, I think, is it more harmful in a way? Because it's the instant access and the pictures. Like, the thing that happened with John Edwards. I felt sorry for him.
I think that, you know, we don't need to know about that. But though there were no blogs when Monica Lewinsky happened, although I guess Matt Drudge did break that story. But, it, you know, it's, if you think that's a story worth breaking, you know, I think it was just a story that kind of bogged down the wheels of government for 2 years. I don't care, personally. Some people do. Some people say, I believe that's a fair reflection on the candidate's character. I don't. I don't care who, you know, you want to sleep with. I'm not voting for your sexual predilections. You know, I'm voting for your policy positions.
And you spent a lot of time on the Hill. Can you talk a little bit about what the coolest part of that experience is, having that sort of bird's eye view of what's going on?
I thought that people in Congress would be a little bit, would be reluctant, obviously, or not even reluctant, but just too busy to have, you know, the time to have me show up and, you know, kind of sniff around and or stand in their office or do anything. And they were quite busy, but luckily, you know, they felt like people don't understand Congress very well, at least in terms of their opinion of them, and that they hadn't been portrayed fairly in the past. So a number of congressmen said to me, like, yes, you can come in here. I will talk to you. Get it right. It's this, it's this, it's that. We don't do this. We do this. They had pretty strong opinions about... Now, granted, my character does, you know, doesn't... You know, some unflattering behavior. So I was like, listen, I want to tell you right up front. I don't want to say I'm basing my character on you because that won't be good for your political career. But people still, the overall sense people wanted to get across, I think, is that there are folks who are working hard. There are people who are intelligent. You know, there's this like bias I think people have about Congress, that like this huge lumbering body that just like gives away money, and it's like those big sloppy, you know, Muppets from Dark Crystal that just march next to each other incredibly slowly, like, you know, and that wasn't that was not what I saw. You know, it was something much faster Muppets.
Is a political career something in the back of your head, or is this Is it something you seriously consider at some point? Or?
I really like my job that I have now, you know. Plus, in politics, you have to, like, unlike Hollywood, you only have to get, like, one director to hire you. In politics, you got to get a lot of people to vote for you. You know, I think it's harder work. But I'm happy what I'm doing now. In fact, I've never been kind of at a place where I felt better about going to work every day and more engaged. So I'm very, very happy.
What's changed? Why is that?
I don't know. You know, that's hard to say. Who knows? Life is weird. There's family or certain just place, or you learn. You know, every time you learn, as at least I do, as I've gone along, and it's gotten to a point where I've really gotten comfortable with the things that are important to me and what I don't need to do. I don't, like, worry as much about making choices that I hope will appeal to certain, like, externalities, you know what I mean? Like, well, this movie, you know, it's got to work in this way or make X amount of money or in order to keep me at X place in a career, you know, all this other stuff that I think gets in the way. Rather, it's like, this is an interesting role that's got some, you know, character in it that seems complicated and real, and I get to work with talented people. That's my criteria, and it's easy. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you had a very successful directorial film recently, and I heard you might be getting behind the director's chair again in Boston, actually.
Yeah, I'm directing another movie, and I'm going to act in the movie as well, so yeah, that's that's a slightly daunting prospect, but we'll see. But I'm excited. Nervous, but excited. It's called The Town, is the title I'm using now. I'm not sure that it'll still be that. But it's based on a book called Prince of Thieves by a guy named Chuck Hogan, and it's about, it's sort of based on true fact that there's this neighborhood in Boston called Charlestown where, like, there's more armed robbers per capita than anywhere else in the world. And it's about this group of guys who rob like a bank and an armored car. And, you know, it's sort of, rather than a heist movie, it's the very kind of real sort of version it's very realistic. Like, you see kind of how that the guys really operate and what they really do. And it's about kind of their lives and their connection to one another and the way that where they live is changing. And I don't know, it's unusual and kind of complicated for a movie that has at its root like a kind of conventional genre thing.
Will you be keeping the Fenway Park climax?
Oh yeah, you got the thing, read it? I hope so. We're in discussions with Fenway Park right now. You know, we have to get their permission, but if they say no, I don't really know what we'll do. We'll have to come up with a new climb. It's going to be Gillette Stadium. I don't know.
Did you write this yourself?
There was an adaptation already. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you adapt it? You
know? Yeah, no, someone had adapted the book already. And so when I came on, there was an adaptation that I fooled around with, but the adaptation was, you know, strong, and the author adapted it, and that's really good. And so I'm lucky, you know, that I, you know, it was kind of there. It's like, God may be gone. There was no previous writer, and this, you know, somebody already did all the hard work and all this really good work. So I'm kind of coasting on that.
When you hear talk about a possible Daredevil reboot, do you ever feel like, what the hell? What's wrong with mine?
No, I don't ask that question. I'm just going to get myself in trouble, so let's just...
I definitely want to know, as a fellow New Englander, what would you do to get Dunkin' Donuts out here?
I heard that some people were pitching in to, like, buy a franchise, you know, but then, you know, that kind of fizzled. You know, I would do that. My only fear is that L.A. people would... You know, like, one Dunkin' Donuts donut is 20,000 calories.
But there are donut shops in every corner here, and that's the trip part.
That's true, that's true. I love it. I love the coffee more than anything.
You can get the coffee at Rouse.
There's one in Torrance.
But you can't get the full, like, you know... Yeah, exactly.
John Kurinsky from The Office said that he talked to them. I'm sorry for doing this, but he said he talked to the CEO.
Oh, I think he's who I talked to about
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He said that there may be a charity one on Sunset that he's trying to put it together.
Oh, did he go forward? I would do whatever it took. I told John that, so he I think he's aware of that. I think that was who I had this conversation with, in fact. He said a couple other guys, like, from New England, he was, like, more gung-ho than I was. He was fired up. Which I love it. I mean, I really do love Dunkin' Donuts. I mean, not to go into a full pitch commercial. A certain point, yeah. I should be getting the Johnny Damon money, that, you know, whatever it was that he got to do. Remember those ads where he took the hair off?
How is fatherhood with the second baby at home?
That's great. That's great. I, you know, I'm very, very lucky. I definitely feel blessed to look around and see that I've got like a healthy family and a job. It's you know, especially nowadays, you really feel like very, very good.
Are we past the banana mashing conflicts you told us about the first time around?
Yeah, I'm in pretty good zone, you know. Right now, although I say that, I'll go home and everything will be exploded. But so far, so good.
There was a scene in the movie that we were talking about, and not the print, but at the end when it was discussed about the $26,000 a month or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was kind of vague to a few of us. So just for us, you know, and not for print or whatever. What was your take on her knowing about the $26,000 that she was spending a month, or was it
that Robin?
Yeah,
no, yeah, there was some issue that at a certain point. There was some talk about, which I kind of liked the idea of making her complicit, but that didn't end up being the way we went. I thought that would be kind of cool, like really bold, actually. I really pushed for it with Kevin, and he was kind of, you know, he was like non-committal to my face, which means that behind my back he was like, "That Affleck's crazy. We're not gonna do it." But
the movie was directed by Mike Myers.
That's right. That's right. No, Shrek, donkey. He talks like Shrek. No, he didn't. He barely has an accent. But he is Scottish. But he ultimately, the idea was that money was that I had just told her innocently. You know what I mean? And she had passed that on to Russell. So she was a conduit of that information without knowing that it was that she was passing on like something. You know what I mean? So that I was trying, in explaining how what happened and making, like trying to explain to her, no, it was just this one time. You know,
yeah.
You know, like, trying to make her feel more comfortable with what happened, and that she was being paid. You know, I gave her this amount of money that she had been paid, and she, remembering that, tells Cal.
Right.
And then Cal realizes, like, oh, he must have told his wife this, like trying to explain to her, honey, no, you don't understand. She got paid $26,000. It wasn't like that. They gave her all this money. And there's no way that he could have told his wife. It's basically the scene where I, you know, me saying, like, the $26,000, and he would say, how do you know that? Except it was through Robin, you know?
Right. That was a sinister plot twist for me. I was like, wow. So was she.
I would have loved that, man. I agree with you. But
I just want one last question for you about Mike. You worked with Mike Judge on Extract, and I love his two previous films. Could you talk about just working
sure.
with him and your character?
I love Mike. And Bateman. Bateman is the lead of this movie.
Oh,
and Bateman is spectacular in the movie, I think. If you're a Bateman fan, it's Gay Rage. Bateman's Gay Rage is on fire in this movie. Bateman, this is the third time I've worked with Bateman. My wife has done three bids in Bateman. So we're a six Bateman sentences. We're a six-time Bateman household. And so we're fans. But this movie is really very, I think, it was just, that was really funny. I mean, it's very, you know, Mike's got a very particular sensibility. So it's not just like straight down the middle. That's one of the things I like about it. I think it's really funny. I haven't seen the whole thing. I've just seen some pieces of it. But, you know, like I say, Jason's great. And I play a guy who, I'm kind of the worst friend in the world, you know. I'm like Jason's friend, but it turns out I'm really into drugs, and I like to give him drugs. I keep trying to get him high, and then he tells me he's got this wife, he tells me that he's attracted to this other woman who, but he's married, so he's conflicted about it. Meanwhile, I give him like some Xanax, and I'm telling him, like, man, what you should do is, you know, like, hire a gigolo to like sleep, hit on your wife. And then if she says yes, you won't feel guilty about it. He's kind of high, and he's like, yeah, it kind of makes sense. And I hire the wife, and then, you know, she immediately fucks the gigolo. You know what I mean? So I don't know. And it becomes, that's like in the very beginning. It's
what does that have to do with Vanilla Extract?
he owns a Vanilla Extract plant. Basically, it's very, very funny. Mike is great and a really gifted, smart guy, and Jason is terrific. And I was really just happy to be in the movie.
The thing about Mike's films is he's been screwed over by the studio twice. Is this going to be the film that people can actually see?
I don't know. I hope not. It's Miramax, and you know, it is incumbent on them, I think, you know, to try to, because I think it could be a commercial movie if you know, released properly. So, and I know them, and I think they're smart people. So I have no reason to expect that they will screw him. But you know, I'm optimistic. But I'll let Mike speak for his. Himself in that regard.
Is the timing feeling right for you and Matt Damon to find a project to work on together?
Yeah, we were trying to do something. We were going to do something together this year, the end of this year, and then I took this other thing to direct. This is The Town. And so that kind of pushed it off till next year. So supposedly we'll do this thing next year, which I think we will. Matt is, you know, always pretty busy, but claiming that he's going to try to slow it down a little bit. And so we'll try to figure out sometime next year. He's going to do, you know, the Bourne movie, and he's got this really cool Mandela movie that he's doing now. So I'll have to fit it in, and he's doing the movie George Nolfi's directing right after that, in between those two. So he doesn't mind taking a year, I think, to wait. But yeah, I would love to, and you know, it's great, and it's both of us are busy, and because Matt lives in Miami, it's. It's hard to get a chance to see him. It's like to work together just to get an excuse to hang out.
So Celts back to back?
What's that?
Celts back to back?
I don't want to jinx anything, but no, I hope so. You know, it's great. It's great to have basketball be exciting in Boston. It's a good thing. Like, you know, have some winners. We are all right, Boston sports, you know? Like, you know.
As a huge fan of Good Will Hunting, what do you guys? Have you guys already worked out? Maybe I'm not smart, but
We have a project. We haven't said what it is because just because of like lame kind of political money reasons and stuff. Because if we da da da, but it's just a movie that we were gonna do together. It's. I think it'll be good.
Does that mean write it together?
No, it's actually this script is actually mostly already written. So we wouldn't write it together.
Would you direct it or would you guys hire
someone? It's possible I would direct it or else we would both be in it and find a director.
Have we expect to see any more YouTube antics from you anytime soon? They're very entertaining.
I hope so. If I could find a a way to if I find something as funny as that, if Jimmy writes me something as funny as that, you know, in the future. But that was really great. I like Jimmy a lot. He's very funny, and he's that experience was a lot of fun. Although it is one of those things where I was like, God, I wonder if this will the internet still be around when my kids are teenagers?
Having come up with Matt and having the Hollywood successes you have, what's it like when you have now your families together, when you have those opportunities to see each other?
It's cool. You know, we went on a vacation last summer, and, you know, that's nice. It's nice. It always has been. You know, he's got his family growing, ballooning, and we're doing okay, and it's nice to get a chance to, you know, I think it's be the same for anybody, you know, your friends when you're young and you have a certain kind of life, you know, so you're teenagers and you're just kids and then you're in your 20s and you have a different kind of life and then your 30s and you get married and you have families. It's a different kind of thing and a different kind of satisfaction from being around your friends, the friends you grew up with as, you know, people, you know, like have kids and have barbecues and that kind of a deal. And that's really satisfying too. It's one of the nice things about having friends for a long time that you've known that, you know, so it's cool. It's my brother. My brother's doing good.
Which of this year's big summer movies are you looking forward to seeing?
Wow, I don't even know what's the. Tell me a couple that are coming out real quick.
Families. There's Pixar's Up. Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. I love the Harry Potter movies. What's for grown-ups though? I mean, Harry Potter's for grown-ups.
Terminator, Star Trek, Transformers 2, G.I. Joe.
I'll definitely Star Trek. I think I'm real excited to see what JJ did with Star Trek, and Terminator. Terminator is going to be. I mean, Terminator is going to like gotta blow up. That thing's going to be huge. I think. Public Enemies?
Yeah.
Does that come out this summer?
That's
July.
Is it really? They're still shooting, I thought.
Yeah.
Are you sure that's coming out in July?
Yeah.
Wow. Maybe they're not still shooting. Yeah, I love Michael Mann. I see all his movies, so that's a guarantee, definitely. I mean, you know, it's great. There's a lot of great filmmakers out there. There's a lot of people making a lot of good movies. And that Chris Pine, who's in Star Trek, was in Smoking Aces with me. And I saw that, and I was like, this kid is spectacular. He is going to be a very successful actor. And I was like, I think you're going to be great, man. I think your career is going to go a long way. He looked at me like I was crazy. He was like, what is this guy talking about? So I was really psyched to see that he got that Kirk part. So next time you interview him, tell him I said hello.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, guys, be good. Thanks. All right. Have fun.